Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 5:21 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 10th. Recording on Sunday rather than Friday for the big picture, long-term audio and video for the various different asset classes. I'm happy, well, I guess not happy, but I'm sure subscribers would be glad to know that David's funeral was a very moving service, and I think any of us would be gratified to really think that we had such a large contribution to the lives of such a very large number of people. And certainly that's there was also talk of a memorial service, and twinning that with both the Chart Seminar, which is in its 50th year this year, and also with the London Philharmonic Orchestra, since David was a great patron there, they're talking about having a memorial concert. So that would be in October, and we're certainly looking at organizing the memorial for then. Well, ruminating about the markets over the last few days, certainly when we look at the number of shares that are trading above their respective 200-day moving averages on the NYSE, we're up now to about 36%. Right at the end of last year, it was pretty close to the lows we saw in 2011 and in 2016. So that will give us an idea of the magnitude of the sell-off that has occurred, and that the logical comparisons are with 2011 and in 2015, 2016. And we have had an impressive rebound over the course of the last 7 weeks, and that has continued. So this has been a very deep pullback. Now, the bigger question is, what are we going to see for the remainder of the year? Well, there are obviously a lot of people that look at the January effect and the fact that the market did finish up on the year, or excuse me, up on the month, is well, correlates generally with a broad opinion that the market will be positive for the year. Now, the bigger question, though, is that didn't work in 2018. Certainly, we had a very good month in January, and it did not persist through the end of the year. So, obviously, that is a question mark over the January effect. But of course, there is an exception to every rule. But the much bigger question, I think, right now is not so much about the stock market. It's residing with the outlook for liquidity, whether that is going to originate from either the monetary field or the fiscal field, and then the question about the bond markets. Because if we simply contrast what we're seeing in the stock market with what we're seeing in the bond markets, then we're getting two rather different opinions. So on the S&P 500, for example, we've seen a pretty impressive rally from 2350 up to 2700. So that's certainly taking us back into where we have a potential area of resistance. That is represented by the region of the trend mean, and there is still a sequence of lower rally highs. When we look at the NASDAQ 100, well, that is also now right in the region of its sequence of lower rally highs and the region of the trend mean. And we did get some easing from that psychological 7,000 level in the last 3 days of last week, but it did finish on the high of the day on Friday. And earnings have generally been positive. Well, that is representative of the fact that we'd had a very substantial pullback in the last 3 months of last year that pretty much priced out any earnings growth at all. And we are still seeing that there are a substantial number of companies that are coming through with pretty sturdy earnings. So in particular, Boeing is a very good example of that. It has had a rip-roaring rally from $300 to $400 in the space of 6 weeks and pushed onto new high ground. So we had a failed upside break in September, failed downside break in November, December, and now it is right back up at a high again. So this is a very large degree of volatility following a one-year hiatus, which in turn had followed a very impressive rebound, breakout and acceleration, in fact, from the end of 2016 through to the beginning of 2018. Now the question is, having replaced the short-term oversold condition with a short-term overbought condition, what can we anticipate next from Boeing? The likelihood here is that we are at least due some consolidation following such a very impressive rebound. So we have definitely continued to see this rebound on stock markets continuing on Wall Street. The rebound that we've had on in the European markets has not been nearly as impressive. The DAX, for example, was down on two consecutive days and is back below the 11,000 level. But much more important than that is that the sequence of lower rally highs is very much still intact. And that was a really quite considerably large downside weekly key reversal last week. Now, if we get downside follow-through next week, well, don't think we could conclude that there is anything here other than a really quite consistent downtrend that's been in evidence now for more than a year. And when I clicked through all of the international markets in here before conducting this broadcast, that was the very clear signal. It's Europe stands out as a center of weakness. And when we look at, for example, the ASEAN region or India, or indeed even Latin America. Now, Brazil, for example, has been very steady. And of course, they do have a new right-wing leader there, and that has propelled the market to new all-time highs. And that it is equally susceptible to some consolidation, but this is very clear relative strength overall, particularly when we compare it towards Europe. I had the pleasure of driving down to Devon on Friday with a former colleague of mine and David's. He's a portfolio manager now for a Swiss firm, and he was pointing out the fact that India is better covered than Europe by analysts. Well, that is a testament to just how I think profound the challenges are that are facing Europe. And I think that is what brings me to look at the bond markets, because that is where the really big contrast is. We see that we've had a very impressive rebound in the stock market, but the yield on the 10-year treasury has compressed from 3.25% down to 2.55% in January, and it has not really bounced by any clear discernible margin. Having had a low of 2.55, it's a 2.63 now. That's nothing compared to the kind of rally that we've had on the stock market. And this is crying out for a higher reaction low in here. 2.5% is a big psychological level. It's almost as important as 3% was when yields were first pushing through that area. So the bond markets, and it is not simply treasuries, because if we look at what's going on in the Bund, then we get an almost identical chart, and then we're talking about really very low levels. 8 basis points for German Bunds is an incredibly low level. Well, what that is very clearly stating is that there is no prospect of the ECB raising interest rates. When we look at, for example, Italian yields, they have bounced from the 2.5% level. So they are moving higher now against a background where where we're starting to see German bunds starting to compress. Well, that also helps to highlight where the risks are in the Eurozone, that you have a volatile populist administration in one of the original members of the G7, and that's not a condition that is particularly confidence-inspiring for fixed-income investors. So there's little wonder then that people are pouring money into bunds because they have uncertainty with regard to just about everything else. Well, that has got to be starting to ask questions about France, where there is an upstart movement in terms of the yellow vests. So that has not had any real effect yet on the oats yield, and it's down to 54 basis points. But again, these are where the clear risks reside. Well, what that is beginning to suggest is that the bond market is a lot more worried about the potential for a recession than the stock market is. The bond market has no choice but to really spend most of their time concentrating on the likelihood of a recession, because returns are, well, it's for a lot of investors, it's not about the return on your money, it's the return of your money that's important. For people that are worried about growing their wealth rather than initially making their wealth, well, then it's all about protecting the principal. And for bond market investors, that is the tantamount risk, that it's of catastrophic loss in a default situation. So they can't bear the potential for a recession. But then, of course, there is the fact that bonds do particularly well in a recessionary kind of environment because people are looking for a safe haven and interest rates get cut. And that is the most likely set of circumstances, that in the event that the global slowdown persists, then we are going to see the likelihood of additional rate hikes being priced out of the market. So, for example, the Morgan Stanley index for the probability of rate hikes is back in negative territory. So, that's telling us that the market is not willing to price in the potential for any interest rate hikes this year, and even potentially a rate cut. Well, when we look at the stock market and the fact that it has been rallying, well, eventually if the rally persists, then the Federal Reserve will start to become somewhat more antsy about the potential for overheating. So then they could potentially then start to talk about raising interest rates again. Well, if they start to do that, the stock market would probably start to sell off again. So they have a pretty much a catch-22 situation. They can't raise interest rates any further. And if they do, then the bond market would probably have conniptions. So that's a very considerable risk to the market that we have today. And we do have short-term overbought conditions on a substantial number of the Wall Street indices. I think most interesting of those is the Russell 2000, because it has now just about approximated the region of the trend mean, and it also still has this sequence of lower rally highs. This is the clear area where it's going to have to demonstrate a return to demand dominance. It's a very similar story for the regional banks index, and that index pulled back by more than most. Going from 120 to just above 80 is a substantial percentage decline for an index that has been outperforming the banks in the US for the vast majority of this bull market. I think it's also worth highlighting the consumer staples, because they also had trended higher in a very persistent manner all the way through, really, until the beginning of 2018. And now it looks more like a significant loss of momentum and a very clear failed upside break in January a year ago. So the very big level for this index is 500, and generally speaking, consumer staples are both highly leveraged to the health of the global consumer, but then also to the health, therefore, of the global economy. So this rally, as long as it persists, can be given the benefit of the doubt, but if it breaks its short-term sequence of higher reaction lows, well, then we'll have to start asking questions again. If Europe is being priced out, it's for the simple reason that the ECB has stopped in, or, well, they have said at least that they are going to stop increasing the size of the balance sheet, and the size of the balance sheet did contract last week. So that is one of the issues that is really assailing the European stock markets. there has been a very clear correlation between any whiff of a recovery in European markets to the willingness of the ECB to continue to inflate asset prices through quantitative easing. If they're less willing to do that, that's going to suggest issues for the European stock market. Now, the Chinese market has been closed for a week. One thing that we have seen is that the iron ore price opened a limit up in Dalian this morning, or this morning in China at least, and that it is likely to trade up in a significant manner when it opens up after the holiday in here today. What we've definitely started to see is that some of the iron ore companies have been anticipating this move, and there is a dearth of supply right now as a result of the Brazilian accident. But it's a much broader story of a return to demand dominance by the industrial metals. So copper prices now are right in the region of their trend mean. Nickel prices have been resurgent over the course of the last few weeks. They were a little bit softer on Friday. Now the question is whether we're going to get a higher reaction low. The tin market has also been resurgent in here, and it is coming back towards the upper side of a medium-term range. When we think about some of the other commodities, then lumber prices have been trending higher in a pretty aggressive manner from the lows that we saw towards the end of last year. Now, last week was the first evidence we've seen of at least a peak of short-term significance, or that this rebound has begun to run into some trouble. One issue that I've seen talked about over the course of the weekend has been that some people are starting to get their tax refunds from the IRS in the USA. And a lot of people, generally those that would consider themselves to be middle class or lower middle class, nurses and teachers, are highlighting that their tax refund this year has been lower than it has been for the last few years, and that is directly in response to the Trump tax cuts. But of course, those tax cuts were primarily oriented at investors and companies, and less so at individuals. So that is something that is likely to hit consumer spending, because one of the things you definitely get in the USA in the period between approximately February and May is a lot of companies advertising for people how to spend their tax refund. Now, a lot of people contribute money to their pensions, and that pension money would get invested in the stock market. A lot of people then also pay down some of their credit card debt, but if they're not getting as much money coming through, then that's also going to be hit. Well, the stock market tells us that there is money flowing into it because it continues to rebound. When we look at delinquency rates, then that is a I think that is something that we should look at. So if I pull up, say, credit card delinquency and just look at the last 30-day data, which should be somewhat more sensitive, then the delinquency rate has been coming down from a high level around 6% all the way down to about 1.5% over the course of the last 4 years. So if this starts to tick upwards, well, then that is going to be representative of tightening liquidity. So that is going to be something to keep an eye on. It is it's reported with a our 1 month in advance, excuse me, with subject to a 1 month lag. So that means that any data we get at the end of February is going to be representative of what we got at the end of December, because it's in arrears with a 1 month lag. We already know that joblessness or first-time unemployment data has been ticking up as a result of the government shutdown. If the government shuts down again, then that is going to contribute to further slowdown. So we're going to see more jobless claims, and people are getting less money in their tax refunds. Then, of course, that is one of the things that generally, if people get a few thousand dollars as a tax refund, then that's a nice sum of money to put down for a new car, for example. Well, if we look at, for example, Ford, then this continues to represent a very consistent downtrend, and there's a substantial risk that it may, in fact, be downgraded. General Motors was well off its highs in here this week, and it had broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but there is a short-term overbought condition right now. So these are, I think, issues that suggest that when bond yields are continuing to compress, and that this is a condition that we're seeing not just in the U.S. or in Europe, but the 10-year JGB, sorry, I haven't typed that correct very effectively. We're also seeing those yields starting to come back down again, and they've gone negative again. Well, this is pretty much making a nonsense of the Bank of Japan's determination to try and hold the yield at around 10 basis points. When we look at what's going on in Australia, then what we've also started to see is the yield starting to come back down. And it is now coming back towards the lows we saw all the way back in 2016. Well, Australia has a housing slowdown. And I think we need to see that the relative strength that popped up on the banks last week is sustained. We certainly had a very clear upward dynamic on the banks in the latter half of last week, and it is now testing the sequence of lower rally highs. When we look at the financials, then we get a similar story that it isn't simply that it's the banks, but that the financials, which also includes the insurance sector, has now got a higher reaction low and is testing its sequence of lower rally highs. This is suggesting that the RBA is not going to be raising interest rates, and in fact they may be pushed into a tightening mode. So, excuse me, an easing mode. If that's the case, then that should act as a tailwind to assets. But then, of course, I think we have to question how much of the rally against that environment is the Australian dollar going to hold. And the Australian dollar pulled back from the region of the trend mean in a rather dynamic manner last week. Now it's steady right now, but and this is also an area of a low towards the end of January. 70 cents, though, is a big psychological level, and it really does need to hold that level if we're not going to conclude that this is still a supply-dominated environment. The New Zealand dollar, which had been somewhat steadier, is a little bit, or it has at least been able to sustain the move above the trend mean, or at least in the region of the trend mean for the last few months. But of course, it is also going to have to hold that 65 cent level. What's, I think, particularly interesting is that the New Zealand Fully Gross Index has been one of the clearest relative strength leaders internationally. It's got a really quite consistent trend, and it found support in the region of the trend mean and has been able to push up and through it. So that is one of the clearest and most consistent trends that we have of any international market over the course of the last few years. Considering just how much money and New Zealand generates from exports to China, then that's I think potentially a vote in favor of Chinese demand continuing to hold up somewhat. But That does bring us to the very large question of exactly what can we expect from China. The market has been closed for the last week. Ahead of the New Year holiday, the Chinese had announced a raft of measures to try and support the market and to free up liquidity. Now we're going to have to see how willing they're going to be to really follow through on that. We're going to see some taxes cut. We're going to see more money being made available to companies. There was the effort to try and convince investors that private companies would get the same kind of access to credit as state-owned companies. I'm not at all sure that anyone really believes that. And we're going to have to see a clear change in terms of what's going on in China to really help to support the market. The CCI, or the Continuous Commodity Index, is still towards the lower side of its range. But more importantly than that, it was down on two consecutive days at the end of last week. It really does need to hold the 350 area and the lower side of this evolving more than 3 year range if we're to really give the benefit of the doubt to the potential for commodities to recover. What happens in terms of Chinese demand is, and more importantly perhaps, demand growth is the of the utmost importance, not just to the commodity complex but to the global economy. A more substantial slowdown in China would have a knock-on effect internationally, but most particularly on Europe. The European surplus in terms of exports is heavily skewed towards demand from China and then from the USA. But that's most particularly the case for a country like Germany, where you get a lot of machinery orders coming from China. That's also why the Deutsche Telekom has got approximately 50% of its 5G network has been supplied by Huawei. So, with the substantial questions being raised about the integrity of Huawei's networks and whether it doesn't simply just give a backdoor to the Chinese Security Administration to anywhere it's been installed, that's something that Germany is going to pretty much have to look past. Because they cannot afford to have a trade war with China. Now, when we think then about what exactly the charts are telling us on the Chinese market, well, if we look at 10 years, we can see that they have been subject to incredible volatility. There has been a clear downtrend evident since the beginning of 2018. And it has bounced from the 2500 point level, and back in 2012, 13, and 14, that 2500 point level represented an area of resistance. So, this is a natural point where we could anticipate a bounce. But it's going to have to do more than it's already done. And how well the banks do is probably going to be a lead indicator for the stock market. And the banking index has bounced more impressively, and I think importantly, did not quite pull back all the way towards the upper side of the base put in between 2011 and 2014. So the banks are continuing to exhibit relative strength, and not least because they have got some of the clearest evidence of support from the government. So that's certainly, I think, a point in favor there. Then, when we look at the H share index in Hong Kong, well, these are Hong Kong listed Chinese companies, and the thing that it did before the New Year holiday was to sustain a move above its trend mean. So these are reasonably positive indications that China is going to follow through on its commitment to increase liquidity. Well, we do need to see liquidity improving, and that's particularly the case on the monetary front. What we definitely saw last week was some contraction in central bank balance sheets, and it's been holding here around this 20 trillion level since January. Now, of course, there are a lot of moving parts in this index because it is including the outlook both for how the dollar performs against the renminbi, the euro, the yen, and then also how each of those central banks is contributing liquidity to their respective markets. I think one important point is that JGB yields are compressing, and the Nikkei this week encountered resistance in the region of 21,000, and that is a downside weekly key reversal as well. So we have seen a downside key on the Nikkei and on the DAX. And when we look at the yen, then what we are presented with is a dollar that has rebounded from the lows around 105 to 110, and this is about where we might anticipate some resistance starting to come through. The second section index has rebounded really quite impressively, and now it's right in the region of the lows that was put in back in November. It has almost unwound all of its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. So this is the do or die moment really for these markets. The fact that Bund yields and JGB yields have been coming down, that's really representative of investors starting to get, I think, nervous about the outlook for their respective economies. Well, that heightens the potential that the central banks are going to engage in additional stimulus, but we haven't yet seen evidence of that. Then again, we also have when we look at fiscal stimulus, and I do believe that the most likely scenario is that we are going to get additional rounds of fiscal stimulus. That it would be, I think, comparatively easy for the US administration to negotiate an infrastructure bill. And that's, of course, if they can get past the issue of whether to spend some money on building a border wall. Europe could also engage in letting up on its commitment for fiscal austerity. I think one of the issues that does not seem to be really discussed at all, and this I think has really come, there was two impressions that I got from speaking to people in the UK over the last few days. There were at least four different people talked to me about the role of Russia in influencing elections. And I think that anyone is, or everyone is of the opinion that there is evidence of that. But the fact that I had four different people talking to me about it on separate occasions, in separate circumstances, in different, and from different parts of the market, all talking about that, and not least with regard to Brexit, that is I think, a real testament to the disaffection that we have with the entire situation, and there is a very real sense that geopolitical tensions have increased. And then there is the question about what exactly is going on with Europe. One thing that I haven't seen anybody really talking about is why did Europe engage in the austerity program in the first place? Like, what was the raison d'être for the austerity program? Well, the austerity was primarily aimed at bringing debt to GDP ratios for the entire EU into alignment. So the periphery of Europe had a much bigger challenge to do that because they had more debt as a result of having to absorb the massive debts that their respective banks had accrued over the course of the preceding 10 years. Well, What's the purpose of aligning the debt to GDP ratios? And if you look at the timetable for austerity for Europe, then it goes all the way out to 2029 or 2030. It's at that point that if the austerity program is held to, and this is why the European Commission and the bureaucrats in Brussels are so committed to the austerity program and ensuring that it is sustained, it's at that point that you could potentially then implement fiscal union. If everybody is following the rules and all debt to GDP ratios are the same, then there is an argument that you could then implement fiscal union, and that would create a federal Europe. When we look at the potential for a deposit insurance corporation to be set up in Europe, well, that's not going to happen until the consolidation of the European banking sector has occurred, and that will probably have been implemented again if Europe can hold its nerve, then that would be implemented by approximately 2025. So what we have in fact with regard to Europe is a clear commitment towards moving to a federal Europe. And that is the plan. That is why the austerity program has been instituted. What does not seem to be understood by the bureaucrats is that we have a widespread revolt right across some of Europe's largest countries at the thought of an additional decade of austerity. We've already had a decade of austerity, and the bureaucrats who are not really subject to the austerity are suggesting that it continue for another 10 years. And the rise of populism in Italy, the success of populists in both Poland and Hungary, the success of the Yellow Vests in France, the rise of Action for Deutschland in Germany, these are all revolutionary movements against the status quo. But most particularly, that it is they have not yet characterized their revolt as anti-federalist. And eventually that is going to appear, that Europe is going to have a very clear discussion about exactly what they want. And that's where the really big risks are, because the target two balances that are outstanding for Germany are very substantial. And they represent notes against the sustainability of the European project. The very fact that Europe is moving towards a federalist system is one of the clearest reasons why the UK needs to have the discussion about whether to stay in the EU or not, because Europe is at a crossroads and sleepwalking towards what I think the vast majority of European citizens don't want. And the UK is pretty much the only big country that's having a really big discussion about exactly what it does want. Well, quite whether it can get what it wants, and because there's no one else really willing to have the discussion yet, is still a very big question. When we look at the pound, however, when against the euro, the pound has got a base formation, and it has bounced from the region of the trend mean over the course of the last few days. I continue to think that a deal will get pushed through, and it will probably be membership in all but name. And that is probably not really what anybody wants, but it is probably what they're going to get. And that is going to leave an awful lot of people who are really deeply unhappy about the set of circumstances that is going to be delivered after the pain and suffering of the last 3 years of negotiations. But it does look to me like the pound has got a base formation against the euro. This rise of populism and disaffection with the status quo is, of course, not just a European issue. And the fact that there are a lot of people are going to be disappointed with their tax refunds in this tax season in the USA could represent an electoral issue. It is also obviously going to be a problem wherever you have elections. The fact that you have Brazil, where a right-wing candidate succeeded, and Mexico, where a left-wing candidate succeeded, that the UK represents a very clear existential issue when they have the next election, because the kinds of people that are going to be seeking election are going to be from opposite ends of the political spectrum. There just does not seem to be any room any longer for the middle. Well, that's a significant issue because that's going to create a polarized environment where more extreme views become popular. Then, of course, you have the fact that China is increasingly moving towards a fascist administration, and that is something that certainly needs to be monitored rather closely, and most particularly if the subjugation of internal populations morphs into subjugation of overseas populations. And then the big question will be whether the international community will be willing to appease China, or whether they will take a more forthright stance towards them. I think that it is inevitable that that is going to happen at some point in the next decade or two, that countries do not build aircraft carriers for fun. The only reason one builds aircraft carriers and overseas bases is to project power internationally and to both protect interests and supply lines. Well, that's obviously going to be a big factor for China, considering its consumption of oil. But oil prices are, I think, more likely to range than trend for the foreseeable future. We are going to have some very powerful moves, both up and down, but the really impressive advance that we had for a decade between 1998 and 2008 is over. We're not going to have, at least in my opinion, we're not going to have another decade of advances in the oil price. We'll have trends that persist for a year or two, and then we'll have trends that persist for a year or 18 months on the downside. Well, we've had a meaningful pullback over the last few months, and the price now is pretty much around the $60 area. The lower side of the range is probably just south of 40, and at an extreme, 30. And the upper side of the range is probably just north of $100. So there is scope here for some steadying, but that is all contingent on the outlook for the global economy remaining positive. Now, one thing that we certainly see in markets is that cyclical sectors tend to do well in the latter stages of a bull market. So when we look at the mining complex, the fact that iron ore prices have popped on the upside and that miners are starting to respond in kind, that's a testament to the fact that the market is relatively well balanced, and that supply shocks can have a positive effect. But together with the fact that government bond yields are coming down, the relative strength of gold has got to, I think, point to the fact that there is this the clear risk here that with such an enormous amount of debt outstanding, that the next big move from governments is to flog their currencies. And if they debase the currencies, then that will raise the price of things that cannot simply be lent into existence. So gold and property do tend to do well when currencies come under pressure. And gold prices continue to push back up towards the upper side of what is effectively a more than 3-year range. And a range within what is a very broad 7-year base formation. So there is the potential here that gold could be a hedge that returns to fashion against a background where we're probably in for some additional strength in bonds, and then big questions starting around just how much further this rebound in equities can go without getting a bit of a pullback. The other sector that is tending to attract interest right now is emerging markets, because they trade at a reasonable discount to Wall Street in particular. But their continued strength is very much tied to the dollar. And when, for example, we look at the Thai baht, it has been strengthening pretty impressively over the course of the last 6 weeks. When we look at the Indonesian rupiah, then it has also been able to sustain a move stronger than its trend mean. The Brazilian real has also strengthened through its trend mean, although it was weaker last week. Even the Mexican peso, where you do have a new left-wing government, it has strengthened over the last 6 weeks and is now testing the dollar sequence of higher reaction lows. I think those are important currencies to really pay attention to, because the euro was down on consecutive days last week. It's now right at the lower side of its range again. If we think about one of the things that David always said was happiness in the currency markets was having the trend and the central bank on your side, but also that the best trends were when you were able to match the strongest with the weakest currencies. Well, the dollar is no longer the strongest currency, but the euro is almost certainly the weakest. And some of those emerging markets are starting to strengthen up once more, most particularly those that are not importers, excuse me, not big exporters of commodities, but do have reasonable growth opportunities, not least because of positive demographics. Well, India is the market that really stands out in that regard. Now, Modi's administration is setting out to buy the election, and they are doing that by cutting interest rates and even introducing tighter regulation on foreign firms to lend a hand to domestic firms ahead of the election. So that is going to contribute to, I think, some volatility on the stock market, because depending on how much money they are willing to spend, that could put pressure on the rupee. And the rupee has been pausing in the region of its trend mean over the course of the last few months. It is going to have to strengthen through it in order to really demonstrate that we have a low of more than short-term significance. When we look at the banking sector, then it has been able to hold the region of its trend mean. But that, I think, hides the very wide disparity in performance that we have among the Indian banks. There are some of the privately held banks that have had substantial credit crunches. Yes Bank, having bounced all the way back to the trend mean, is now coming back down to test its lows. Whereas if we look at Axis Bank, then we could be forgiven for thinking that there was a problem at all. And the bank was in fact able to push on to new high ground this week. Well, obviously it has a short-term overbought condition, but this is very clear relative strength. India, of course, is a massive market with a huge young population and a very active consumer sector. The big question is whether they can get their manufacturing act together. If they can do that, then a future of robust economic growth is probably going to be relatively assured. And that suggests that India could very well be a hedge against a more hostile environment towards trade with China. So it is certainly a market that is worth paying particular attention to. There has certainly also been a correlation between the performance of the emerging markets and gold over all of 2018, the fact that they are both now starting to look up is suggesting that people are looking at assets that can give them some hedging against the potential that this loss of uptrend consistency that we've seen on Wall Street is a symptomat or is symptomatic of a broader pause in the market as the as investors begin to start to think about what the next recession might look like. When we look at the yield curve spread, then it has pulled back and it was back below 17 basis points in here today, or at least towards the end of last week. When we look at it just simply on a daily basis, then this is still a really quite consistent downtrend. So it's going to have to do more than simply go sideways to really avert the scope that it is going to become inverted at some point. So I think that's that it really is one of the more important charts to bear in mind, that we don't really get an indication of a future recession until we get an inverted yield curve. We don't get it, the banks would have to underperform by a rather substantial margin. And when we look at the S&P 500 banking index, then it has bounced pretty impressively. Now, of course, this is the first area of potential resistance and it has paused. So this is where there are going to be very big questions asked, and we're not really going to have a clear indication we're back into a demand-dominated environment until we see a higher reaction low that holds. So that's the other thing that we would look at. So on the one hand, if we're thinking about what is it that we can look at for indications of future recessions, well, we can certainly look at the yield curve spread. We can look at the performance of banks because they're credit providers and therefore should do well in an environment where, in a liquidity-fueled environment, which you need for a bull market. Obviously, we can look at the consistency of the trends on major indices. We can also then look at delinquency rates. We can look at unemployment rates. Obviously, if those are still contracting, then that is good news from the perspective of the economy, because you can't very well have a recession without people losing their jobs. So those are all, I think, things that are starting to flash yellow, but have not really given us a very clear indication just yet. Then, of course, you've got the leading indicators. So when you look at the conference board's leading indicators, well, they're still not worrisome. And it would really have to, it's been coming down for the last couple of months, but it would have to go negative before we could really conclude that we are on the cusp of a recession. So what this is really suggesting is that we are still in a medium-term correction for the vast majority of stock markets, that if the markets are going to be propelled additionally on the upside, we are going to have to see a source of new liquidity starting to come through. Europe and China represent certainly potential areas of our sources of liquidity, and so does the Federal Reserve. The fact that the Federal Reserve has rolled back on their commitment to continue to raise interest rates and reduce the size of their balance sheet is a testament to the fact that we do have a Powell put. One thing we can be sure of is that if we do have a recession, that every measure imaginable is going to be pursued in order to avoid the depth of a contraction. And what that suggests is that quantitative easing, or QE4, QE infinity, is a potential outcome. So is helicopter money. We're already starting to see that universal income has been implemented in Italy. Although, to be fair, when you look at the fact that Italy didn't previously have unemployment insurance beyond a year for the unemployed, this is really just introducing a socialist program that has been evident in a number of other countries, particularly in Northern Europe, for a long time. So to call it universal basic income would be something of a misnomer. The rise of populism and the potential that that represents for fiscal stimulus is also, I think, a very important factor as well. So it's not as if we don't know where the potential sources of liquidity could come from. And what we are looking for, however, is sources that they are in fact coming to the market. And the ability of markets to hold their recent advances and to put in higher reaction lows will be the true testament that we've seen the lows for this corrective phase. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.